This is Audible.
Harlequin Audio is proud to bring you Welcome to Moonlight Harbor, a Moonlight Harbor novel by Sheila Roberts, performed by Anne-Marie Gideon. Chapter 1. To do. Clean office, see dentist at noon, drop Sabrina off at mom's, meet everyone at Casa Roja at 6. Or just tell them I've got bubonic plague and cancel. The four women seated at a corner booth in the Mexican restaurant were getting increasingly noisier with each round of drinks. Cinco de Mayo had come and gone, but these ladies still had something to celebrate, as they were all dressed in bodycon dresses or slinky tops over skinny jeans, in killer shoes, and wearing boas. There were four of them, all pretty, all still in their 30s. Except the guest of honor, who was wearing a black dress, a sombrero, and a frown. She was turning 40. It was going to take a while for her to get as jovial as the others, like about a million years, considering what she'd just gotten for her birthday, a divorce. "Here's to being free of rotten, scum-sucking, cheating husbands," toasted Celeste, sister of the guest of honor. She was 35, single, and always in a party mood. The birthday girl, Jenna Jones, formerly Jenna Pettit, took another sip of her mojito. She could get completely sloshed if she wanted. She wasn't driving, and she didn't have to worry about setting a good example for her daughter Sabrina, who was spending the night with Grandma. Later, if they could still work their cell phones, the gang would be calling Uber and getting driven home and poured into their houses, or, in the case of Sister Celeste, apartments, so there was no need to worry about driving drunk. But Jenna wasn't a big drinker, even when she was in a party mood, and tonight, she was as far from that as a woman could get. What was there to party about when you were getting divorced and turning, 40? Still, that mojito was going down pretty easily, and she was inhaling the chips and salsa. At the rate she was going, she'd be getting 5 extra pounds for her birthday as well as a divorce.
"Just think, you can make a whole new start," said her best friend, Brittany.
Brittany was happily married with 3 kids. What did she know about new starts? Still, she was trying to put a positive spin on things.
"And who knows, maybe the second time around you'll meet a business tycoon," said Jenna's other bestie, Vanita.
"Or someone who works at Amazon and owns a ton of stock," put in Celeste.
"I'd take the stock in a heartbeat," Jenna said. "But I'm so over men." She'd given up on love. Maybe judging from the chewed fingernails and grown-out highlights in her hair, she'd given up on herself, too. She felt shipwrecked. What was the point of building a rescue fire? The next ship to come along would probably also flounder.
"No, you're over man," Brittany corrected. "You can't give up on the whole species because of one loser. You don't want to go through the rest of your life celibate."
She shuddered, as if celibacy was akin to leprosy.
"Anyway, there are some good ones out there somewhere," said Vanita, who at 36 was still single and looking.
"They're just hiding," she added with a guffaw, and took another drink of her margarita.
"That's for sure," agreed Celeste, who was also looking now that this is it, relationship number 3, had ended.
With her green eyes, platinum hair, pouty lips, and perfect body, it probably wouldn't take her long to find a replacement.
"Men! Can't live with 'em? Can't..."
Her brows furrowed.
"Live with 'em?"
Jenna hadn't been able to live with hers, that was for sure. Not once she learned Mr. Sensitive Artist had another muse on the side, a redhead who painted murals and was equally sensitive. And had big boobs. That had nothing to do with why they were together, Damien had insisted. They were soulmates. Funny, he'd said the same thing to Jenna once. It looked like some souls could have as many mates as they wanted. Damien Pettit. Handsome, charming, rat. When they first got together, Jenna had thought he was brilliant. They met at a club in the U District. He'd been the darling of the University of Washington Art Department. He'd looked like a work of art himself.
with brooding eyes and the perfectly chiseled features of a marble statue. She'd been going to school to become a massage therapist. She, who had never gotten beyond painting tiles and decorating cakes, had been in awe, a real artist. His medium was unrecyclable detritus. Junk. Too bad she hadn't seen the symbolism in that back when they'd first got together. All she'd seen was his creativity. She was seeing that in full bloom now. Damien had certainly found a creative way to support himself and his new woman, with spousal support from Jenna. Seriously? She'd barely be able to support herself and Sabrina once the dust settled. Nonetheless, the court had deemed that she had been the main support of the family, and poor, struggling artist Damien needed transitional help while he readied himself to get out there in the big bad world and earn money on his own. Her reward for being the responsible one in the marriage was to support the irresponsible one. So now, he was living in the basement of his parents' house, cozy as a cockroach with the new woman, and Jenna was footing the bill for their art supplies. Was this fair? Was this right? Was this any way to start off her 40th year? Her sister nudged her. Hey, smile. We're having fun here. Jenna forced her lips up. Fun. You can't keep brooding about the junk, jerk. I'm not, Jenna lied. Yeah, you are. I can see it in your eyes. I know it's not fair you have to pay him money, put in Brittany, but that's how things work today. You know, women's rights and all. If men can pay us spousal support, we can pay them too. Since when does women's rights give your ex the right to skip off like a 15-year-old with his new bimbo and you pay for the fun? Jenna demanded. It was sick and wrong. She'd carried him for years, working as a massage therapist while he dabbled away, selling a piece of art here and there. They'd lived on her salary, supplemented by an annual check at Christmas from his folks, who wanted to encourage him to pursue his dream of artistic success, and grocery care packages from her mom, who worked as a checker at the local Safeway. And her grandparents, God bless them, had always given her a nice fat check for her birthday. Shocking how quickly those fat checks always shrank. Damien drank up money like a thirsty plant, investing it in his art. And certain substances to help him with his creative process. Maybe everyone shouldn't have helped them so much. Maybe they should have let Damien become a starving artist, literally. Then he might have grown up and gotten a job. They'd had more than one discussion about that. And when? He'd demanded. Am I supposed to do my art? Evenings? Weekends? He'd looked heavenward and shaken his head. As if you can just turn on creativity like a faucet. One of Jenna's clients was an aspiring writer with a family who worked 30 hours a week. She managed to turn on the faucet every Saturday morning. There was obviously something wrong with Damien's pipes. I need time to think, time for things to come together. Something had come together, all right, with Aurora Benedict, whose mother had obviously watched one too many Disney movies. Jenna probably should have packed it in long before Aurora came slinking along, admitted what she'd known after only a couple of years into the marriage, that it had been a mistake. But after she'd gotten pregnant, she'd wanted desperately to make things work, so she'd kept her head down and kept plowing forward through rough waters. Now, she and Damien were through, and it still didn't look like clear sailing ahead. Game time, Celeste announced. We are going to see who can wish the worst fate on the scum-sucking cheater. I have a prize for the winner. She dug in her capacious Michael Kors purse and pulled out a Seattle Chocolates chocolate bar, and everyone, including the birthday girl, let out an ooh. Okay, I'll go first, Brittany said. May he fall in a dumpster looking for junk and not be able to climb out. I'll drink to that, Jenna said, and did. Oh, that's lame, scoffed Vanita. So, you think you can do better? Brittany challenged. Absolutely, she said, flipping her long black hair. May he wind up in the Museum of Bad Art. There is such a thing? Jenna asked. Oh, yeah, Vanita grinned.
Ha! Celeste crowed. That would serve him right.
Jenna shook her head. That will never happen. To be fair, he is good.
Good at being a cheating scumsucker, Celeste reminded her and took a drink.
Vanita tried again. Okay, then. How about this one? May 1,000 camels spit on his work.
Or 1,000 first graders, added Celeste, who taught first grade.
How about this one? May the ghost of Van Gogh haunt him and cut off his ear, Brittany offered.
Vanita made a face and set down the chip she was about to bite into.
Ew.
Ew is right, Jenna agreed. But I'm feeling bloodthirsty tonight, so I'll drink to that.
I think that one's your winner, she said to her sister.
Celeste shook her head.
Oh, no. I can do better than that.
Go for it, urged Brittany.
Celeste's smile turned wicked.
May his paintbrush shrivel and fall off.
And to think you teach children, Jenna said, rolling her eyes. Nonetheless, the double entendre had them all laughing uproariously.
Okay, I win the chocolate, Celeste said.
You haven't given Jenna a chance, pointed out Brittany.
Go ahead, try and beat that, Celeste said, waving the chocolate bar in front of Jenna.
I can't. It's yours. Their waiter, a cute 20-something Latino, came over.
Are you ladies ready for another drink?
We'd better eat, Jenna said. Her mojito was going to her head. Celeste overrode her.
We've got plenty of night left. Bring us more drinks, she told the waiter. And more chips.
She held up the empty bowl.
Anything you ladies want? He said and smiled at Jenna.
Celeste nudged her as he walked away.
Did you hear that? Anything you want?
Not in the market, Jenna said firmly, shaking her head and making the sombrero wobble. Tonight, she hated men. But, she decided, she did like mojitos, and her second one went down just fine. So did the third. Olay! Saturday morning, she woke up with gremlins sandblasting her brain and her mouth tasting like she'd feasted on cat litter instead of enchiladas. She rolled out of bed and staggered to the bathroom, where she tried to silence the gremlins with aspirin and a huge glass of water. Then she made the mistake of looking in the mirror. Ugh, who was that woman with the ratty, long, blonde-gone hair? Her bloodshot eyes were more red than blue, and the circles under them made her look a decade older than what she'd just turned. Well, she felt a decade older than what she'd just turned. A shower would help. Maybe. Or maybe not. She still didn't look so hot, even after she'd blown out her hair and put on some makeup. But, oh well, at least the gremlins had taken a lunch break. She got in her 10-year-old Toyota. Thank God they made those cars to run forever. This one would have to. And drove to her mother's house to pick up her daughter. She found her mother stretched out on the couch with a romance novel. Unlike Jenna, Melody Jones, Mel to her friends, looked rested, refreshed, and ready for a new day. In her early 60s, she was still an attractive woman, slender with a youthful face and the gray hairs well hidden under a sandy brown that was only slightly lighter than her original color.
Hello, birthday girl, Mel greeted her. Did you have fun last night?
As the night wore on, Jenna had been distracted from her misery. That probably counted as fun, so she said, Yes.
Looks like you could use some coffee, Mel said, and led her into the kitchen.
How's my baby? Jenna asked.
She's good. She just got in the shower. We stayed up late last night.
Jenna settled at the kitchen table. What did she think of your taste in movies?
She was impressed, naturally. Every girl should have to watch Pretty in Pink and Jane Eyre.
And? Jenna prompted.
Okay, so I showed her Grease. It's a classic.
About hoods and hoes.
I don't know how you can say that about an iconic movie, Mom said. Anyway, I explained a few things to her, so it came with a moral.
What? You two can look like Olivia Newton-John?
Mel shrugged.
Something like that.
Now, tell me.
What all did you girls do?
Not much. We just went out for dinner.
Dinner is nice, Mel said, and set a cup of coffee in front of Jenna. She pulled a bottle of Jenna's favorite caramel-flavored creamer from the fridge and set it on the table, watching while Jenna poured in a generous slosh.
I know this is going to be the beginning of a wonderful new year for you.
I have no way to go but up.
That's right. And you know,
every storm brings a rainbow, Jenna finished with her.
I firmly believe that.
And you should know.
She'd had her share of storms.
I don't know how you did it, Jenna said. Surviving losing Dad when we were so young, raising us single-handedly?
Hardly single-handedly. I had Gram and Gramps, and Grandma and Grandpa Jones as well.
Yes, we each have to fight our own fight, but God always puts someone in our corner to help us.
I'm glad you're in my corner, Jenna said. You're my hero.
Jenna had been almost 5 and Celeste a baby when their father had been killed in a car accident. It had been sudden, no chance for her mom to say goodbye. There was little that Jenna remembered about her father beyond sitting on his shoulders when they milled with the crowd at the Puyallup Fair or stood watching the Seafair Parade in downtown Seattle. That, and the scrape of his 5 o'clock shadow when he kissed her goodnight. What stuck in her mind most was her mom, holding her on her lap, sitting at this very kitchen table and saying to Graham, "He was my everything." That read well in books, but maybe in real life it wasn't good to make a man your everything. Even the good ones left you. At least her dad hadn't left voluntarily. Her mom had chosen a good man. So had Graham, whose husband was also gone now. Both women had picked wisely and knew what good looked like. Too bad Jenna hadn't listened to them when they'd tried to warn her about Damien.
"Honey, there's no hurry," her mom had said.
Yes, there was. She'd wanted to be with him now.
"Are you sure he's what you really want?" Graham had asked. "He seems a little..."
"What?" Jenna had prompted.
"Egotistical," Graham had ventured.
"He's confident," Jenna had replied. "There's a difference."
"Yes, there is," Graham had said. "Are you sure you know what it is?" she'd added, making Jenna scowl.
"I'm just not sure he's the right man for you," Mel had worried.
"Of course he is," Jenna had insisted, because at 23 she knew it all, and Damien had been so glamorous, so exciting. Look how well their names went together, Damien and Jenna. Jenna and Damien. Oh yes, perfect. And so it was for a time, until she began to see the flaws. Graham had been right. He was egotistical, narcissistic, irresponsible. Those flaws she could live with. Those she did live with. But then came the one flaw she couldn't accept. Unfaithful. Not that he'd asked her to accept it. Not that he'd asked her to keep him, or even to forgive him.
"I can't help how I feel," he'd said.
That was it. Harsh reality came in like a strong wind and blew away the last of the fantasy. But here was Melody Jones, living proof that a woman could survive the loss of her love, could climb out of the rubble after all her dreams collapsed, and rebuild her life. She'd worked hard at a job that kept her on her feet all day and had still managed to make PTA meetings. She'd hosted tea parties when her girls were little and sleepovers when they became teenagers. And in between all that, she'd managed to make time for herself, starting a book club with some of the neighbors. That book club still met every month, and her mom still found time for sleepovers, now with her granddaughter. Surely, if she could overcome the loss of her man, Jenna could overcome the loss of what she'd thought her man was. Mel smiled at her and slid a card-size envelope across the table.
"Happy birthday."
"You already gave me my birthday present," Jenna said. Her mother had given her a motivational book about new beginnings by Muriel Sterling with a $50 bill tucked inside.
Jenna would read the book, once she was ready to face the fact that she did indeed have to make a new beginning, and she planned to hoard the 50 like a miser. You could buy a lot of lentils and beans with 50 bucks.
This isn't from me. It's from your Aunt Edie.
Aunt Edie? She hadn't seen her great aunt in years, but she had fond memories of those childhood summer visits with her at Moonlight Harbor. Beachcombing for agates, baking cookies with Aunt Edie while her parrot, Jolly Roger, squawked all the silly things Uncle Ralph had taught him. Listening to the waves crash as she lay in the old antique bed in the guest room at night with her sister. She remembered digging clams with Uncle Ralph, sitting next to her mother in front of a roaring beach fire, using her arm to shield her face from the heat of the flame as she roasted a hot dog. Those visits had been as golden as the sunsets. But after getting together with Damien, life had filled with drama and responsibilities, and after one quick visit, the beach town on the Washington coast had faded into a memory. Maybe she'd say to heck with lentils and beans, spend that birthday money Mom had given her, and go see Aunt Edie. She pulled the card out of the envelope. All pastel flowers and birds. The outside read, "For a lovely niece." The inside had a sappy poem telling her she was special and wishing her joy in everything she did, and was signed, "Love, Aunt Edie." No Uncle Ralph. He'd been gone for several years. Aunt Edie had stuffed a letter inside the card. The writing was small, but firm.
Dear Jenna, I know you've gone through some very hard times, but I also know that like all the women in our family, you are strong, and you'll come through just fine. Your grandmother told me you could use a new start, and I would like to give it to you. I want you to come to Moonlight Harbor and help me revamp and run the Driftwood Inn. Like me, it's getting old, and it needs some help. I plan to bequeath it to you on my death. The will is already drawn up, signed, and witnessed, so I hope you won't refuse my offer. Of course, I know your cousin Winston would love to get his grubby mitts on it, but he won't. The boy is useless. And besides, you know I've always had a soft spot for you in my heart. You're a good girl who's always been kind enough to send Christmas cards and homemade fudge for my birthday. Uncle Ralph loved you like a daughter. So do I, and since we never had children of our own, you're the closest thing I have to one. I know your mother and grandmother won't mind sharing. Please say you'll come. Love, Aunt Edie. Jenna hardly knew what to say. She wants to leave me the motel. She had to be misreading. She checked again. No, there it was, in Aunt Edie's tight little scrawl. Her mom smiled.
I think this could be your rainbow.
Not just the rainbow, the pot of gold as well. Chapter 2. To do. Give notice to landlord. Put furniture on Craigslist. Contact school. Taking Sabrina out early. Start packing up office and call clients. Tell Skunkball X we're moving. Like he'll even care.
What an unexpected and amazing gift. Jenna and her daughter would have a home. On the beach. No more rent. No, better than that. They would own something that could produce income for them. A good income. Certainly more than she made now. She handed over the letter for her mother to read.
I knew she was going to do this. It's just what you need, Mom said when she'd finished.
And the best news is you won't get it right away. By the time you inherit, hopefully your 3-year spousal support sentence will be up, and a certain someone won't have any claim to it.
Unless Aunt Edie dies, Jenna said, reality splashing cold water on her euphoria. Then Damien would be right there with his hand out, demanding half of everything she'd inherit. I mean, obviously I wouldn't want her to anyway, she added, realizing how she'd sounded. She loved Aunt Edie and hoped the sweet old woman lived to be 100. There weren't enough Aunt Edies in the world. Mom handed back the letter.
I wouldn't worry about that. All the women in our line are long-lived. She's 82, but she's in good health. No, this is a blessing. No doubt about it.
I still can't believe it,
Jenna said. It all seemed too good to be true.
Can't believe what?
Jenna looked up to see her daughter had entered the room. Sabrina was wearing a pink t-shirt and denim shorts, which showed off long, coltish legs. She'd gotten Jenna's blue eyes and round face and her nose, which, if Jenna did say so herself, wasn't a bad nose at all. And she had a pretty full mouth under it, a mouth which was turned down a lot lately. Her reddish-blonde, shoulder-length hair was freshly washed and blown out, and she'd covered the few scattered zits on her face with concealer. She was a cute 14-year-old. Down the road, she'd be a beautiful woman. If she lived that long. There were times when Jenna wanted to throttle her. Teenage girls could be stinkers. Jenna knew she'd been one. But teenage girls whose parents were splitting could be mini monsters. Who could blame them, though? When the grown-ups and their lives screwed up and the toxic spill splashed on them, they were bound to react. Jenna tried to be patient with the pouting, the tantrums, and the accusations, but sometimes it was hard, especially when her daughter pointed out that if she'd been nicer to Daddy, he'd have never left. In those moments, Jenna bit her tongue until it bled. She'd have liked nothing better than to inform her daughter that she had been nice to Daddy until he started being nice to another woman. If Sabrina wanted to make someone the villain, she should cast her father in the role. But Jenna also knew that father-daughter relationships were important. In spite of all the love her mother had lavished on her, she'd yearned for her own daddy so many times growing up. What Sabrina had with her father wasn't stellar. She was hardly a top priority for him, coming in somewhere after his art, his new woman, and basically all things Damien. But it was better than nothing, and Jenna wanted to try and keep it intact. Sabrina had often volunteered to be his helper when he went in search of his unrecyclable detritus, junk. And they shared a fondness for horror movies, something Jenna had never really approved of him letting her watch. But at least it was something they did together. Okay, he did it and let Sabrina join him. Still, it put them side by side on the couch on a Friday night. There'd been no horror movie marathons allowed since he moved out, another thing her daughter held against her. But Jenna had remained firm. Their life had been enough of a horror movie the past year as it was, and she preferred to fill her daughter's mind with more beautiful and positive images than terrified teens and spurting blood. When Jenna wasn't worrying about money, she was worrying about Sabrina. She'd gone from being a straight-A student to getting C's and D's. She was barely speaking to Jenna these days, and she had discovered the definition of surly. So far, the changes had been limited to an overall bad attitude and nothing more dramatic or dangerous. But Jenna knew that teenage angst could easily spiral into something much darker and more serious. So she walked around holding her breath, her shoulders tight, fearful that things could take a turn for the worse at any moment. She and Sabrina had tried going to a counselor, but Sabrina had refused to open up. Sometimes Jenna wished she could clone herself because she sure needed a massage therapist. Other moms who'd been through this assured her that her listing ship would right itself eventually. Meanwhile, though, she was captaining it alone. There'd been no custody battle and very few visits with Daddy. The blame for this was also laid on Jenna's doorstep, and again, Jenna had kept her mouth shut.
"You've got the house," Damien had pointed out. "I'm in no position to take her."
Of course not. There was only room for two in the basement love nest. Damien couldn't be bothered, obviously, and Aurora, the muse, probably didn't want the competition. So both mother and daughter had been rejected by a man who didn't deserve either of them. But now, all that misery was about to get shoved into the past. Now they had a bright future looming, a new start.
"I have some amazing news," Jenna said to her daughter.
"We get to live at a beach motel in Moonlight Harbor." Her voice was quivering with excitement. Heck, her whole body was quivering. Eagerness transformed Sabrina from sulky to adorable.
"For the whole summer? Wow! Can Marigold come visit?"
"Of course she can, but we're not going just for the summer." The eagerness paused.
"What do you mean?"
"We get to move there. My great-aunt, your great-great-aunt,
live there?" Sabrina interrupted. Yes, your great-great-aunt. Live there? Sabrina stared at Jenna as if she'd announced they were going to prison. Now you sound like Aunt Edie's parrot, Jenna teased, trying to cushion what was shaping up to be a bumpy ride. She has this parrot named Jolly Roger. Sabrina's brows dipped right along with the edges of her mouth. I don't want to move. Oh, darling, it's so much fun down at the beach, put in Mal, trying to help. You'll love it. No, I won't, Sabrina corrected her, her voice tinged with panic. All my friends are here. You'll make new friends, Jenna said. Like that was assuring to a 14-year-old. Blink, blink, blink. Oh no, there it was. The nervous tick that had plagued her during her messy marriage returning with a vengeance. She thought she'd gotten rid of it when Damien left. Sabrina's hands fisted. I don't want to make new friends. I don't want to leave Marigold. Asking Sabrina to leave behind the girl who had been her BFF since they were in fourth grade was the equivalent of asking her to cut off her arm, especially in light of the fact that her father had stepped out of the picture. How could Jenna have forgotten so quickly the passion of those young years, the desperate need to keep your friends and your footing on an ever-shifting social ladder? Best friends were a young girl's emotional anchor. Crap. Crap, 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 crap. I won't go, Sabrina cried. I'll stay with Daddy. Jenna's right eye twitched. Baby, you can't stay with Daddy. He can't take you right now. We've already talked about that. But you said we'd always be close by, that I could see him whenever I want. Big mouth her. You'll still be able to see him. No, I won't. Not if we move away. It's not that far. Well, not compared to someplace like Texas. I won't go. You can't make me. Sabrina turned and fled, and Jenna's excitement crumbled faster than a sandcastle under assault from an incoming tide. She heaved a sigh. I guess I'll call Aunt Edie. Don't you dare, her mother said. This is an opportunity for you to make a better life for yourself and your daughter. Some new life if she ends up hating me even more than she already does. She doesn't hate you. No, she adores me. Anyone can see that. She's angry that her father's gone. You make a good scapegoat. Jenna frowned. He's the one who screwed up, and I'm the one being punished. That's about the size of it, Mom said. I should stay here. Maybe once Jenna's done with school, the opportunity might not be there. Aunt Edie needs help now, and frankly, so do you. Not having to pay rent would make all the difference. I'm not doing that bad, Jenna protested. You're not exactly making a fortune, and once Damien starts taking a bite out of your paycheck, you'll have even less. We could move in with you, Jenna suggested hopefully. Her mom didn't live that far away. Sabrina wouldn't even have to change schools. Of course you could, Mel agreed, and you know I'd be glad to have you. But how long do you think your daughter would put up with sharing that second bedroom with you? She shook her head. I'm afraid none of us can be any help in this. You have one set of grandparents in an over-50 community in Olympia, and a grandmother in a one-bedroom condo in Bremerton. Sabrina wouldn't be allowed in one place, and she wouldn't be happy in the other any more than she would be here. And the truth is, she's not going to be happy anywhere for a while. You know that. But at least she'd be with her best friend if I stayed. At least I wouldn't have to change schools on her. Mel cocked an eyebrow. And she's doing so well where she is. Jenna's head suddenly hurt. Honey, you have to think beyond these next few months, her mother said as Jenna tried to rub away the ache at her temples. I don't know. It's a big step. Most first steps are. And yes, you can stay where you are and play it safe. You can keep limping along with the clients you have. I can slip you money once in a while, and so can your grandparents. But it will never be enough to keep you very high above the poverty level. Once we die... Don't even say that, Jenna interrupted. Her mother and the grandparents had been her safety net over the last year, as well as her rooting section, coaches and therapists, and therapy with Mom had been free. She couldn't imagine life without any of them. She especially couldn't imagine life without her mother, who was both her role model and her best friend. "We're not planning on it anytime soon," Mel said. "Once I'm gone, you'll have my life insurance money, and you girls are in the grandparents' wills, although the recession dipped into Graham and Gramps' retirement pretty heavily. But still."
"Can we not talk about this?"
"Sheesh. My point is that, while down the road you'll inherit a small nest egg, it doesn't help you now. You have to live. Go to the beach, and you can live comfortably. You can build a future." Jenna tried to imagine herself getting her daughter on board with this plan now that she'd seen Sabrina's reaction. She couldn't. The motel had looked like such a godsend, but really...
"I know what you're thinking," Mom said, making Jenna's brow furrow and her lips turn as far down at the corners as her daughter's had only a moment ago. "Stop it right now. You can't keep doing what you've been doing and expect to do well, not with how your life's changed."
Deep down, she knew her mother was right. And deep down, she did want to make a new start and do something special with the rest of her life. But
"you're like a snail that's outgrown its shell. You have to move on, expand your life. Adapt or die, darling."
"And is that what I'm supposed to tell Sabrina?" Jenna retorted irritably.
"No, you simply tell her this is how it has to be. Children are resilient. She'll adjust."
"I don't know." Only a moment ago, this had looked like a great opportunity. What if it turned out to be a great mistake?
"You're not moving to the edge of the earth," Mel said. "Her friend can come visit. She can come here and stay with me and see her father. Tell her it will be fine."
"Like you told me when I kept asking where Daddy was?"
"Exactly. And it did turn out all right, didn't it? You had a happy childhood."
She had. After her father died, the relatives had circled around their bereft little family, making sure both Jenna and Celeste got plenty of love and attention. The grandpas stepped up to the plate, taking the girls to father-daughter dances and coming to their music recitals and volleyball games, along with the grandmas. Uncle Ralph had made visits to the beach an adventure, teaching the girls how to bait a crab trap and how to work a clam gun. When they'd gotten older, he'd also scared away boys he deemed unworthy of his great-nieces, which had turned out to be most of the boys they ever met. That had perturbed them both, but they'd loved him anyway. And Aunt Edie, she'd always been there, smiling and ready to help the girls make wind chimes out of bits of driftwood and seashells, or to bake cookies together. On rainy June evenings, they'd all played hearts and crazy eights, or Jenna's favorite, Monopoly. She'd always won at Monopoly. Now she had a chance to win in real life. But she didn't want to win at the expense of her relationship with her daughter. Resilient or not, kids still paid the price for their parents' mistakes. But surely living at the beach wouldn't be a bad price to pay. Maybe Sabrina would love to dig for clams and make wind chimes. Maybe she'd be as in awe of the spectacle of waves racing to throw themselves on the sandy beach as Jenna had once been. If Jenna could just get her down there.
"This could be good for Sabrina too, you know," her mom said as if reading her mind. "Her father really isn't a very positive influence."
"He's still her father."
"Let him be her father from a distance. It's what he wants anyway."
"Yes, it is." Sad, but true. Damien and his slimy lawyer had done a great job of pulling the wool over the judge's eyes. He'd come away with a very loose arrangement, visitation rights, but no responsibility. He'd be the same father he'd been when they were together, barely involved.
"Someday she'll figure out who the real bad guy is," said Mel. Jenna sighed.
"Part of me wants that, wants to be exonerated. But part of me... geez, Mom, he's her dad. I hate the idea of her ever realizing what a pathetic one he is."
"She will, and it will be hard. But she'll survive. She's strong, like her mama," Mel added with a smile. Then she sobered. "Meanwhile,
Remember who's the child here and who's the adult. It's up to you to move you girls to a better future, even though your daughter isn't able to see it. You have to do what's right, even if it's not what's popular.
How many times had her mother told her that when she was young? She smiled. How did you get to be so wise?
Lots of stupid mistakes, Mel replied, although Jenna couldn't remember her mother ever doing anything stupid.
Trust me when I tell you that you need to take advantage of this. Don't let the fear of the unknown keep you tethered in a place where you can't prosper. And you know I'm not simply talking about money.
Jenna nodded. Mom was right. She'd fallen into quicksand, and now someone was offering to pull her out. She'd be crazy not to take that helping hand. And she wanted this. She wanted to feel alive again, instead of like one of the walking dead. And the move would be good for Sabrina, too. Fresh air, healthy outdoor activities, a summer of fun to distract her from the dark clouds her parents had blown over her life. How was she going to convince Sabrina of that?
She took a deep breath and followed her daughter to the guest bedroom, praying all the way that somehow the right words would drop into her mind. She found Sabrina on the bed, listening to her iPod, tears streaking down her face. Clothes lay scattered around the floor. The book she'd been reading leaned against a corner, its pages fanned out, obviously hurled there in a fit of anger. Sabrina pretended not to see her mother, but the vicious kick at a pair of jeans gave her away.
Oh boy. Both eyes went into action. Blink, blink, twitch, twitch.
Jenna forced her eyelids to stay in place and sat down next to her daughter on the bed. Sabrina shifted so her face was turned to the wall. Jenna laid a hand on her arm. Sabrina yanked it away.
Sabrina.
Sabrina took out her earbuds and glared at Jenna.
It's not fair, she spat.
That much was definitely true. None of what had happened was fair. She sighed.
I know.
You're ruining my life, Sabrina wailed.
No, Damien was ruining her life. He'd ruined both their lives, but that wasn't something she'd say out loud.
I'm trying to get us out of the ruins, Sabrina. I'm sorry Daddy and I couldn't stay together.
I'm sorry your dad's a shit.
But this is how things have turned out, and I don't want us to keep sitting around being miserable. I want to do something that's good for our future.
This was way too philosophical. Jenna tried a new tack.
I want to be able to afford nice clothes for you. I want to be able to pay for all those school activities you're going to want to do when you start high school. I want to be able to save for your college education. I want to try and make things better for us.
Sabrina was sitting with her lips pressed together, a river of tears flowing down her cheeks.
Can you understand that at all? Jenna asked.
Sabrina bit her lip and nodded.
But I don't want to move, she said in a small voice.
I don't want to move you, Jenna said.
But I think in the long run, this will be good for us.
Can you try and keep an open mind?
Sabrina burst into sobs.
I'll take that as a yes, Jenna said and hugged her.
At last, Sabrina's sobs began to subside. She wiped at her nose.
What if I hate it there?
What if you give it a chance? Jenna countered.
It really is a great town, she hurried on. They have this cute ice cream parlor where you can get about 1 million flavors of ice cream, and there's miniature golf and go-karts. Lots of friendly people. Your Aunt Celeste and I used to meet so many cute boys at the beach, she added, sure that would clinch the deal. Her daughter was frowning, but at least she'd stopped crying.
Can Marigold come?
She can visit as soon as we get settled. How's that?
The frown shrank slightly, and Sabrina said a reluctant, okay. Then added,
but what if I hate it?
Back to that again.
You won't, Jenna assured her.
Dear God, please let me be right about that.
Chapter 3. To do. Finish packing up kitchen and craft stuff. Call Aunt Edie with ETA. Rent trailer. Buy chocolate for grumpy daughter.
The first Saturday in June found Jenna Jones and her daughter on their way to Moonlight Harbor, towing behind their car a tiny rented trailer filled with their most valued possessions. Scrapbooks, crafting supplies, clothes, Sabrina's bike and Jenna's massage table and oils, and other business necessities, just in case she needed to supplement their income from the motel. Or in case she got the itch to do massage, which was highly likely since she loved what she did. Most of the furniture had been sold, and that had given her some extra cash. Her linens and the Wedgwood china Graham had given her had been stored in Mom's basement, along with Sabrina's bedroom set, after Jenna realized that would have been the final straw for her daughter. Big clue.
My bed? You're selling my bed?
Aunt Edie will have a bed for you, Jenna had assured her.
But it won't be my bed, she'd argued. And what if we don't like it there? We won't have beds when we come home.
Honey, this is going to be our home. At that, Sabrina had looked thunderous, and Jenna's nervous tic had reappeared.
Okay, we won't sell your bed.
No bed selling. Taking Sabrina out of school early turned out to be the one thing Jenna had done right in her daughter's eyes. Sabrina's grades weren't getting any better. Her teachers were all mean, and she hated school. Jenna hoped she'd be in a better frame of mind come fall. Daddy didn't bother to come see his daughter off. Instead, he'd texted her.
Have fun at the beach. Keep an eye out for detritus for me.
As always, all about him.
She doesn't want to go, you know,
he'd told Jenna when he'd dropped Sabrina off the week before, after a father-daughter run to Dairy Queen that Sabrina had instigated. She'll like it once she's there, Jenna had insisted. If she kept saying it often enough, surely it would become true. And it will help the budget if we have a place to live rent-free while I help my aunt run the motel. She'd conveniently neglected to inform him that she was going to inherit said motel. She may have been stupid when she'd married him, but she wasn't going to be stupid now that she was divorced from him.
Well, at least that way you'll have enough money to pay me what you owe me.
Yep, all about him. You mean, I'll have enough to pay you what you're leeching off me? She'd said, which had sent him roaring off in his truck while Jenna was left steaming. Now, though, as they entered Harbor County, home of beachside towns, fishing ports, and relaxation, the frustration and fury got left behind like unclaimed baggage. So what if the sky was gray and drizzly? The future was sunny. They crested the rise outside of Aberdeen, and in between the giant firs, caught sight of the Pacific Ocean in the distance. There it is, Jenna said, sounding like an Oklahoma land rush pioneer pointing out the promised land. Sabrina was plugged into her iPod and ignored her. So far, her enthusiasm for their new adventure had been underwhelming. But wait till she saw the town. Jenna could hardly wait. Other than one quick visit after her high school graduation and a honeymoon weekend with Damien, she'd been MIA since her sophomore year in high school. Her first real job, working at the local McDonald's, had kept her away. Then came the friend with the house on Hood Canal where there were boys galore, followed by a couple of boyfriends. Then, of course, along came Damien, who didn't fall in love with Moonlight Harbor like she'd hoped. After they married, it seemed as if every time she planned to visit her aunt, something came up that prevented her from going. Damien demanded a lot of attention. Actually, more than a lot. Looking back on her life, it seemed she'd married a psychic vampire. As their marriage progressed, he grew bigger and she grew smaller, an insignificant planet orbiting him. Scrapbooking and various craft projects fell by the wayside. How could scrapbooking and refurbishing old furniture compare to art? And by the way, had she finished those posters for his exhibition? She'd been crushed when he'd found another woman. Now she couldn't help but wonder if Aurora had actually done her a favor and set her free, allowing her to come back to a place that had given her a happy childhood. Maybe it would give her a happy adulthood, too. They drove through Aberdeen and then Quinault, a small town that had given up on logging and was working its way back to prosperity. "We're almost there," Jenna said to Sabrina after another few miles. "Beachcombing, whale-watching, cute boys..." That last item on the list made Sabrina smile, proof that she'd been able to hear her mother all along. She pulled out an earbud.
Can we get ice cream?
Of course we can. You can't go to Moonlight Harbor and not get ice cream at the ice cream parlor. At last, they reached their destination. There was the same white rock gateway to the town that Jenna remembered, one of the first things to go up when the town was new. She didn't remember the molehills rising like tiny mountains from the grass on both sides of the gateway, but there were flowers in the flower beds. Someone cared, and maybe they didn't want to hurt the moles. She knew the many deer who roamed the town were a protected species, so why not the moles? They turned in and started down the main road through town, Harbor Boulevard, named for the harbor that sat at the south end of town. Once a bustling harbor with a ferry service to West Haven, a busy fishing town across the bay, it had gotten silted in over the years and was no longer viable for commercial use, although the pier was still there. The town's lifeblood was now tourism, and shops and restaurants abounded, with a couple of small dated motels sandwiched in between. Many of the businesses were housed in buildings that had gone up in the 60s, but some new buildings had also sprung up, including an eye-catching group of cabana-style shops all painted in beachy colors of turquoise and mint green, yellow and an orange that made Jenna think of creamsicles, offering everything from women's clothing to kites. And there was a new addition, an art gallery. If Damien had known about that, maybe they'd have made more trips to the beach. The seafood restaurant shaped like a lighthouse was still in business. Jenna had always loved the whimsy of that place. In spite of the drizzle, people were out shopping. Many of them were seniors, hardly surprising considering the fact that there was a large retirement community there. But Jenna saw a few young families and some couples as well. Where were the cute boys? As if reading her mind, Sabrina asked, "Where are the kids my age?" "They're here." "Somewhere?" Jenna stole a look at her daughter. She was assessing the town, and so far she didn't look impressed. Farther ahead on the left sat Good Times Ice Cream Parlor, one of Jenna's favorite haunts when she was her daughter's age. Right next to it was the Go-Go Karts go-kart track and the Paradise Funplex, which consisted of a miniature golf course and an arcade. This should improve Sabrina's mood. Indeed it did. Her daughter was actually smiling. "You ready for ice cream?" Jenna asked. Sabrina nodded, and they pulled in. The parlor itself was housed in one half of the square building, painted pink with white trim. An arcade took up the other half, and next to that was the go-kart track and the miniature golf course. Good times indeed. A giant cement strawberry ice cream cone sat out in front of the ice cream parlor, perfect for photo ops, although with the drizzle, no one was bothering. Inside, several people sat in booths or at little white wrought iron tables and enjoyed double-scoop cones, sundaes, and milkshakes. A retired couple frowned at a woman with a crying toddler who was trying to pay for ice cream for two little boys who were chasing each other back and forth. A middle-aged couple shared what looked like a hot fudge sundae. A couple of teenage girls and a boy with scraggly hair wearing a Seahawks sweatshirt over baggy jeans stood at the counter, selecting ice cream while the pimply-faced boy behind the counter waited for them to decide. He caught sight of Sabrina, and his eyes widened in appreciation. She gave him a discouraging frown. His customers turned to see what he was staring at, and the other boy smiled at Sabrina. She smiled back, but the two girls gave her the stare of death, which, of course, brought back her frown. Meanwhile, the woman with the squalling child and rambunctious boys had finished paying and left, leaving the woman behind the counter free to wait on Jenna and Sabrina. She was in her 60s with a smile as wide as her girth. Her hair was almost all gray now, but Jenna would know that round, smiling face anywhere. Nora Singleton had been dishing out ice cream since Jenna was a kid.
"Hello, ladies. What will you have?" she asked.
"I'll have a big order of sunshine," Jenna said, quoting what she used to tell Nora whenever it was raining.
Nora squinted at her.
"Jenna?"
Jenna nodded.
"I'm back."
"Well, welcome back. We haven't seen you around here in ages."
"It's been too long," Jenna agreed.
"Your aunt said you'd be coming to help her. I'm so glad. The poor thing's been struggling ever since Ralph died."
She shook her head. Hardly any of her family even made it down for the funeral. Jenna had been one of the ones who hadn't made it, but life had gotten in the way. When Uncle Ralph died, she'd been too busy coping with a miscarriage to want to go anywhere. Instead, she'd sent flowers. It was the best she could do at the time. Anyway, she was here now, and that was what counted.
It's good you're here, Nora said.
She turned her 100-watt smile on Sabrina.
And who is this?
This is my daughter, Sabrina, Jenna said, and Sabrina murmured a polite, Nice to meet you. She may have been unhappy about getting uprooted, but it wasn't stopping her from showing good manners, and Jenna was proud of her.
You are just as cute as your mom was at your age. You'll have all the boys after you, Nora predicted, making Sabrina blush. What kind of ice cream would you like?
Sabrina looked down the rows of tubs.
Bubblegum? One of our most popular. How about we top it with a scoop of deer poop?
Sabrina's eyes shot open.
Excuse me?
Chocolate with chocolate-covered raisins, Jenna translated. Sabrina smiled and nodded.
Okay.
And how about you, Jenna? No, wait, let me guess. One scoop of sand pebble for you.
Sand pebble?
Sabrina scanned the tubs.
Butter brickle with peanuts.
What's butter brickle? Sabrina asked.
Nora rolled her eyes.
What have you been feeding this poor child?
Obviously not enough ice cream, Jenna said.
Obviously, Nora agreed. And how about a second scoop?
Neither Jenna's budget nor her waistline needed a second scoop.
I think one will do. I hope you're not passing up a second scoop because you're dieting. You obviously don't need to.
If I eat too much of your ice cream, I will, Jenna said.
I can't think of a better way to get fat, Nora said with a grin, and got busy scooping out their treats.
It looks like you've expanded, Jenna said, motioning to the neighboring Funplex.
Yes, we have. My boys, Bo and Beck, run all that. In fact, adding the arcade and the bumper cars was Beck's idea. Needless to say, it was a good one.
So your boys are still here? Jenna asked.
Oh, yes. You can't take fishermen away from the beach. My daughter moved away, but she comes down to visit. Okay, bubblegum and deer poop, she said, giving Sabrina two giant scoops and a waffle cone. That's our welcome-to-town serving, she said with a wink.
She refused to take Jenna's money once she'd handed over the cones.
Consider it a welcome-home gift.
Back in the car, Jenna offered her cone to Sabrina to sample.
Good, isn't it?
Sabrina nodded.
I like bubblegum better.
I did too, until I discovered sand pebble and wild huckleberry, Jenna said, and started the car.
They continued down Harbor Boulevard past more shops and restaurants, many looking a little tired and in need of paint, and a place to rent bikes and mopeds.
Can we do that? Asked Sabrina.
When you're old enough to drive, Jenna said, making her frown.
Offshoot streets with names like Beach Way and Razor Clam led to the other main drag, Sand Dune Drive, which ran parallel to the boulevard. The streets also took people either to the beach in one direction, past more shops, or away from the water to the neighborhoods where the natives lived. On Sand Dune Drive, visitors could find a grocery store and pharmacy, as well as the library and the police and fire departments and City Hall and the Seaview Medical Building, which wasn't much bigger than a house, to name a few. Jenna pointed to a restaurant in a faded red building. Red-checked curtains at the restaurant windows gave it a homey, welcoming look. The Pizza Palace has the best pizza in the world. We'll have to go there. Sabrina nodded eagerly. Pizza was her all-time favorite food. Next to that sat a low building that housed Sunken Treasures Consignments and a new shop called Cindy's Candies, which was sure to be a hit with Sabrina. Across the way sat the Drunken Sailor, the town's popular pub, and here was something new, Cannabis Central. Well, there was a good pairing. It was hardly surprising that the town would now have a pot shop. Ever since Washington legalized marijuana, pot stores had been popping up all over like acne on a teenager's face. More tourist treats awaited them past the roundabout.